Morning. Today's daf in Shabbos is Yud Aleph. We're in Yud Amud Beis. We're towards the bottom of the Amud. We're starting this morning with the words Amar Rava Bar Mechasya, Amar Rav Chama Bar Guri, Amar Rav. There are a bunch of them. It is about 7-8 lines from the bottom of the Amud. The Gemara now is going to be quoting a series of halachas that are said over in the same Baal Memra. The Baal Memra is the series, is a chain of Amarim that I just read. I counted between yesterday's daf and today's daf. There are 9 in total. Yesterday we did 3 of them, starting at the top of the Amud Beis of yesterday's daf. The first one was, you're allowed to say Amuna in the bathroom. Amuna is not a name of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, it's just simply an adjective of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And from there going forward, the Gemara has rattled off a number of other halachas, and they're not all halachas. Some of them are just going to be ideas, hashkafa, that are set over in the same Baal Memra. So picking up right where we left off yesterday, Amar Rav Bar Mechasya, Amar Rav Chama Bar Guri, Amar Rav, La'olam Yachzir, Adam V'yashav B'ir Shishivasa Krova. A person should look for a city that has been recently inhabited. The word Krova over here literally means close, but in the context of the Gemara, it means that it's more recently inhabited. It doesn't have a big history, a long history. Shemitok Shishivasa Krova Avonasa Muatim. So the reason why is because if it's a if it's a newer city, so it'll be a little bit cleaner in terms of avonos, right? Like the analogy of a car, a used car, so it accumulates a lot of gunk over the years. So by way of analogy, so the same thing with a city and its sins. A city just simply accumulates its avonos over the years. And so therefore the Gemara recommends that a person live in a newer city. So why should this be? Shenamar, the pasuk says, Hinei ha'ir azos krovala nushama v'him itzar. Now we know that when Lot was saved from the city of Sodom, so he recommended to the Malachim where he should go. So he pointed to a particular city and he said that he would like to go to the city of Mitzar. My Krova. So what does it mean, Krova? So Ilam Krova, Demikarva, Vizuta. So perhaps what Lot meant is that it's closer, it's physically closer. So the Gemara says, Va'aka Chazilei. Well, that doesn't make any sense. In other words, he's telling the Malachim that this city is closer. The Malachim could just simply look and see for themselves. So the Gemara says that it must be that because it's a newer city and it is not as long, it doesn't have as long a history, so therefore its sins are going to be minimized. Now, Amar Abi Avin Maikra. Now, the Gemara is going to make the case argument that the city of Mitzar is actually a more recent city than the city of Sodom. What's going to come out from this Gemara, from the small calculation that we're going to be seeing coming up ahead, is that the truth of the matter is that Sodom is not much older than Mitzar. In fact, we're going to learn together that Sodom was all 52 years of age, and Mitzar was all 51 years of age. So it's really funny that the Gemara now is going to be making a point, all because one city is 1 year newer and fresher than another city. But anyway, that's how the numbers work out. And so, and the Gemara says that it proves the point that you should go to find a newer city. Now the Gemara says, how do I know this? Because go back to the Psukim, Im Latana Shama. So he says, please let me go there. The Gemara uses the Gematria, the word Na, and Gematria is 51. So Na be Gematria Nun Vechad Have. Vishalsdom Nun Vebeis. Now the city of Sodom is 52 years old. Now Rashi over here goes through a lot of the calculations in terms of how we arrived at that information, that Sodom was 52 years of age. I'm not going to go through the entirety of Rashi over here on the bottom of the Amud, but just some interesting highlights from the Rashi. Number one, Rashi says that once Bavel was spread out, after the Migdal Bavel, so Rashi writes that there was only one populated community, one world populated community, meaning that before Migdal Bavel was spread out, that was it. That was the entirety of the world, not only world population, but everyone was centralized in that one location. And it's only after the Haflaga are communities sprouting out in other places. And so the city of Sodom begins immediately post-Haflaga. And again, you can take a look at Rashi quotes Seder Olam in terms of how he arrives at that information. Tosus notes that the Haflaga occurs in the 48th year of Avraham's life. Quoting Seder Olam, arriving at this information. So Avram was 48 years of age when Sodom was built and created. And of course we know that Avram was 99 years of age. If you include the year 48, include the year 99, so you're going to arrive at 52 years. So Sodom was a settled community for a total of 52 years. Okay, and Rashi gives us more details, but anyway, some of the highlights of Rashi. Meanwhile, heading back now to the Gemara, last word on Yud Amud Beis, Vishalvas Chavav. Now, as far as those 52 years, the Gemara is going to be very specific in terms of Sodom had 26 years of tranquility. Now, even the Gemara is going to not provide it in chronological order, but based on Rashi, it basically goes like this. For 12 years, Sodom served King Kedar LaOmer. You remember in the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha, there was this world war, four kings against five kings. So during those, during 12 years, this is the first 12 years of Sodom's existence, so they served the king Kedar LaOmer. For the next 13 years, they rebelled. And then in the 14th year, they were finally successful in the rebellion. So if you put those numbers together, 12, 13, and 1, so you end up with 26 years. So for 26 years, it was basically, it was servitude, revolution, victory. That's the first 26 years of Sodom. And then the subsequent 26 years, because remember, Sodom was 52 years in total. The subsequent 26 years was years of tranquility. And the Gemara says exactly that point. I told you, the Gemara is just simply presenting it out of chronology. V'shalvasa chavav dechziv. Now, it was tranquil for 26 years. The pasuk says, Shnei Mesrei Shana Avdu, Ez Kedar La'omer, V'shalosh Esrei Shana Mardu. So for 12 years, they served Kedar La'omer. For 13 years, they rebelled. Meaning, the pasuk is to be understood the next 13 years. Uva Arbasar Shana, in the 14th year, they defeated Kedar La'omer. So that's 14th year of the 13th. I know it gets confusing because 13 is in addition to 12 and 14 is in the 14th year. So understood that the Torah is a little bit ambiguous in terms of how these numbers represent, but our Gemara has a clear understanding that the 12 years followed them by 13 years and then in the 14th year of the 13th year. So that makes a total 26 plus another 26 years of tranquility. And that gets us to the 52 years of Sodom. And now just wrapping it all up, the Gemara just made one singular point. Once you know that, so then you know that we know that Mitzar was only 51 years old as a city, as a settled city. And so because it was newer, albeit just by 1 year, so it was considered, therefore, a place where Lot favored because, again, it didn't have all those accumulated avonos. Continuing in the Gemara, we are on the top of Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. Amar Rav Bar Mechasya, Amar Rav Chama Bar Guri, Amar Rav. This is now the fifth memra. Kol ir she gagusel gvol mi beis haknesses l'sof charva. Any city where the roof of any given house is taller than that of the shul, so that city is going to be destroyed. Shenemar, quoting a pasuk in Ezra, l'ramim es beis elokeinu lahamid es chavasav. So, we have to elevate the Beis Elokeinu and make it higher than all other buildings. V'hani mili bebatim. Now, this is true only as it comes to residential houses. Avab kishkushe v'avrurei. Rashi explains them as some sort of tower. So, leitzlam ba. So, that's fine. Towers can be taller than the shul, but residential houses cannot be taller than the shul. Amar avashi ana avde lamasa mechasya. Delo charva. So Rav Ashi says, look, he was responsible for the city of Masa Mechasya. He was the Rosh Hashiva of Masa Mechasya. And he assures that the city was not destroyed because he made sure that nobody's houses exceeded in height than that of the shul. So the Gemara says, Va'acharva. So the Gemara points out, yeah, but you know, historically, that's not factual. Masa Mechasya was, in fact, a destroyed city. So the Gemara says, Me'oso avon lo charva. Yeah, that's true, but it's not as a result of that particular avon. Okay. The Gemara over here does not explain why. Why should the houses not be taller than the shul? And truth of the matter is, neither does Rashi. Rashi here does not give any explanation why that should be. The simplest explanation would be, is that you have to realize what is really the epicenter of the community. And if anyone builds a house that's taller than the shul, so it's basically a lack of respect for what is our priority. That's the simple pshat in the Gemara. And the but nevertheless, the that is the fifth member of Rav. Here we go, number six. Amar Rav Amar Mechasi Amar Vchama Barguri Amar Rav Tachas Yishma'al V'lo Tachas Nachri. A person should find the following people to work for and avoid the following people. A person should work for a Yishma'al, basically an Arab, V'lo Tachas Nachri, rather than working for a Nachri. Now the Gemara says Nachri, Nachri is a non-Jew. Obviously, the Gemara over here means a group that's more specific than just simply a Nachri. My guess would be is that the Gemara over here underwent some serious editing, and the word that was written over here was not originally Nachri, if I could guess. If you take a look at Rashi, Rashi writes Edomim Shayu Rishayim Yoser. So Rashi describes them as Romans. Okay, and again, I have my suspicion in terms of what was originally that was there. Anyway, Tachas Nachri v'lo Tachas Chaver. A person should rather work for a Nachri than working for a Chaver. Now, Chaver over here does not mean, like we normally say throughout the Gemara, a Chaver being somebody who is particularly careful about Halacha. Over here, Chaver is a group. If you look at Rashi, Umam Ibnei Parsim. So it's a nation within the Persians, a subdivision of the Persians. It could be, I saw a little bit of this discussion in my research, it could be the Gemara is here referring to Zoroastrianists. I'm saying that as a possibility. Anyway, Tachas Chaver v'lo Tachas Tamar Chacham. The person should work for a Chaver, even though Chaver should be avoided more than a Nachri. And a Nachri should be avoided more than a Yishmael. But if push comes to shove, it's better to work for this Chaver rather than working for a Tamar Chacham. Now, of course, that's interesting. You think, working for a Tamar Chacham, how could that possibly be bad? And the Gemara puts that high in the list of people you shouldn't be working for. So Rashi over here points out that when you're working for the Talmud Chacham, so because he has such a connection with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, retribution will come swiftly. And if you cross him in any way, so it's serious. And finally, Talmud Chacham v'lo tachas yasam v'amana. And finally, who should not be your employer? So your employer should not be an orphan, employer should not be a widow. And again, Rashi says it's the same idea. Because they have such a tight connection with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, so if you cross them in any manner, so you're going to feel the retribution nearly immediately. And so the Gemara says, so you have to choose your employer, and basically, it's funny, the Gemara says no employer is good, but if you have to choose, so here's a pecking order of who should you choose over whom. Next, seventh memra of Rav. Amar Rav Bar Mechasya, Amar Rav Chama Bar Guri Amar Rav, Kol choli v'lo choli me'ayim. A person can basically stomach any illness except for a stomach illness, right? The Gemara is going to be using three different types of terms to describe illness, choli, ke'ev, and mechush. And if you look at Rashi over here, choli is a serious illness that lasts for a while. Ke'ev comes and goes, and mechush is just basically discomfort. So within each of these three, so the Gemara is going to talk about which is the worst to have of these three. As far as this choli, the intense illness that lasts for a while, all of them are doable, tolerable, except for that of a stomach ailment. In terms of this pain, which again Rashi describes as it comes and goes, so again all of them are tolerable, with exception to heart ailment. And as far as any kinds of aches are concerned, they're all tolerable except for the headache. And kol ra'a. And a person can basically tolerate any kind of bad in his life, v'lo isha ra'a. But when it comes to a wife who's bad, so that's something that's intolerable. The person lives with this woman, and so therefore it is going to be constantly ra'a, without any break. Okay, interesting Gemara, obviously. In other words, things that we can't control, except for the isha ra'a, but things that we can't control. Meaning, in terms of illnesses, meaning, who's to say, you can decide and determine which illness you're going to be receiving. But I would imagine that in terms of where the Gemara takes us to, so it could be a question of how you daven, what illnesses you should be pleading a Kadosh Baruch Hu not to get. Okay, could be. Anyway, continuing. In my count, this is now number 8. Amar Rava bar Mechasi, Amar Rav Chama bar Guri, Amar Rav. My numbering, by the way, goes back to yesterday's daf, meaning in the total number of statements. This is now the eighth memra. Im yu kol hayamim dio. Let's say all the ocean was ink. The agamim kolmos and all the reeds were pens. The shamayim yirios, and for paper we had all the heavens. The heavens were made up of paper. The chobane abram lavarim, and in terms of scribes, let's say the entire world population was made up of scribes. Ein maspikim lechtov chalala shel rishus. If we were to try to write down everything necessary to run a government, we wouldn't have it. Now, obviously, the Gemara over here is speaking in serious hyperbole, but basically, the Gemara says that running a government, that's really complicated. Look at Rashi. Chalala shel rishus. Omek libam shu tzarech liyos lo lev lekama kama medinot. Consider how much needs to go into the heart of consideration for running a country. Masa Katsuv Rashi writes in terms of taxing. Kama mechamos. How much headspace do you need in order to wage war? Kama mishpatim. What about the justice system? Va'akol b'yom echad. And that's all on one given day. So the Gemara says that basically if we could just try to imagine what it takes to run a country, it's impossible. Maikra Amar Rav Misharsha. Shemaim l'ram v'eretz l'amak v'lev malachim ein cheker. Gemara quotes the pasuk in Mishlei, and basically, lev malachim, the heart of the king, ein cheker. There's no way to know the depths of how much goes into running a particular nation. Number nine. Now again, as I pointed out in the beginning, some of the statements over here are halachic, and some of them are hashkafic. This is a hashkafic statement. Number nine. Amar Rav bar Mechasi, Amar Rav Chama bar Guri, Amar Rav Yafetanis l'chalom ke'esh l'na'oris. A person is going to fast. It's good for a dream, like fire for flax. And basically what the Gemara's point is that if a person has a bad dream, and he wakes up from that bad dream, so there's what's called a tanis chalom. So we actually saw this back in Brachos. And the Gemara over here is talking about the efficacy of fasting after having experienced a really negative dream. And the Gemara says it's like fire for the flax, meaning it basically burns it up. Amar Rav Chisda Baba Yom. Now Rav Chisda says that for the Tanis Chalom to be successful, it has to be immediately. Meaning on the morning that you wake up from this extraordinarily bad dream, one is supposed to have a Tanis Chalom immediately, that day. V'amar Rav Yosef Afil B'Shabbos. Rav Yosef says, now even if you wake up on Shabbos after a really miserable nightmare, so then you can and should fast on Shabbos. Now the Gemara over here, I'm going to remind us what we learned earlier. The Gemara over here doesn't mention it. So fasting on Shabbos obviously is not good, meaning because Shabbos is oneg, it's a day of enjoyment, and one shouldn't be fasting on Shabbos. And we learned previously that if you do fast on Shabbos for Tanis Chalom, so then you're going to have to fast on a subsequent day, it doesn't have to be the next day, but you're going to have to fast on a subsequent day as a kapara for having fasted on Shabbos, even though the fasting on Shabbos is legitimate. The Gemara tells the following story. Rabbi Yeshua b'reid Rav Idi Ikla Rabbi Rav Ashi. So Rabbi Yeshua goes to the house of Rav Ashi, Abdilei Igla Tilsa, and he made for him the third calf. Now Igla Tilsa, so a couple of explanations of what that means. Rashi over here, and our Gemara says, that basically it's the third calf that's born to the cow. And the third calf is the best. The first two, Rashi says, are weaker in general. And so the third one is the best. Rashi, in other places in Shas, gives other explanations. But basically, it was quality meat. Amar le lito marmidi, and he says, look, I prepared for you something really serious. Are you going to sit down with me? Are you going to enjoy eating with me? Amar lehu, his response is, v'tanis yasivna. I can't, I'm fasting today. Amar le v'lo savala amar lahada Rav Yehuda, de Amar Rav Yehuda, lova adam taniso porea. So he says, well, look, do you not know the statement of Rav Yehuda? Rav Yehuda says that if a person takes upon himself a fast, and here we're talking about a personal fast, a private fast, not one of the fasts that were instituted, Zech LeChorban, but rather a person took upon himself a private fast. He made a commitment, a neder. And then, according to Rav Yehuda, if you wake up in the morning and you decide, you know what, I can't fast today, so that's fine, so you can borrow, meaning that you'll just simply fast another day and you'll eat today. So one is allowed to do that. So in explanation, he says, look, I agree with you. I know this. It happens to be that right now I'm fasting because I had a bad dream. And And then he just goes over the memra that we learned together, that fasting immediately after having a nightmare is extraordinarily effective. The Amar of Chista Bobayom, and Rav Chista says, and specifically to have the fast on that day, meaning the day after the nightmare. So basically, I'm in a position where I have to fast today. Va'amar Rav Yosef afilu b'Shabbos, and Rav Yosef says that you fast even on Shabbos. So basically, he excused himself from eating because he had a really significantly bad dream, and so he felt that he really needed to fast today, and he couldn't break his fast. Okay. Continuing now in the Gemara, we are at the two dots. Now, if you begin, says the Mishnah, meaning the Mishnah back on Daf Tes, Amud Beis, introduced us to a number of activities that one is not allowed to engage in the afternoon, not just Friday afternoon, but any afternoon, for fear that he's going to miss Mincha. And the Mishnah says, but if you started any of these activities, so then you can continue at these activities, gauging the fact that there's going to be time afterwards. The Mishnah, then if you look at the end of the Mishnah, almost like repeats itself. Mafsikin l'shma v'in mafsikin l'tfila. And you don't stop for tefillah. So the Gemara says, Hatan le'resha. The last line of the Mishnah, as it relates to tefillah, is just a repetition of what we learned already in the first part of the Mishnah. So, Ein mafsikin, seifa asal nedivrei Torah. So the Gemara says, no, you misunderstand. As far as the seifa is concerned, the seifa was talking about somebody who's engaged in the study of Torah. D'tanya, the Gemara quotes the following braisa. Chavim shayu oskim b'Torah. Let's say you have a group of people who are super dedicated to the learning of Torah. So, mafsikin l'kriyashma v'im mafsikin l'tfila. So, what do they stop for? So, for Shema, which is a mitzvah d'oraisa, for that they stop. But they don't stop for davening. Ah. So, basically, the Gemara's understanding now of the latter half of the Mishnah, the latter half of the Mishnah is not talking about people who are engaged in the activities of haircut, etc., etc. The latter part of the Mishnah is talking about people who are super dedicated to learning Torah. So much so, they don't even have to stop for davening. Meaning for these people, and as we're going to see in just a moment, it's an exclusive group. For these people who are totally dedicated to Limud HaTorah, so they do not stop for Shemoneh Esrei. They do stop for Shema, but not for Shemoneh Esrei. Amar Rav Yochanan lo shalu ela kagon Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai v'chavei Rav. Now the Gemara is going to point out over here that this is a real exclusive group of people that we're talking about. The Rashbi and his colleagues, Shetarasan Umrasan, their life is Torah, right? We've learned that as far as the Rashbi is concerned, so he felt that a person should be learning all the time. A person shouldn't be engaging in work. Now, if you remember, so this was a controversial issue, and other Tanaim disagreed, and the Gemara concluded that most people need to work and of course, learn as well. But this approach of the Rashbi is for the very select few. But for the select few, so they can dispense with Shemoneh Esrei. Ava kagon anu. Now, mind you, by the way, remember who's talking now. Rav Yochanan's talking. But us, and Rashi points out over here, what's the story with us? We don't follow the viewpoint of the Rashbi. Rashi writes, Ava anu. I'm reading Rashi. Hol umafsikin terasenu lumnasenu. Kol shekin shenafsik letfila. Look, we stopped learning so that we could work. So if we stop learning because we can work, so for sure we're going to stop learning in order to daven. And now going back to the Gemara, Aval kagonanu masikin l'krishma u'litfila, and we're also going to be stopping for tefila as well. Okay, so the Gemara says that it's true that the end of the Mishnah is moving on to the topic of somebody who's engaged in the study of Torah can skip Shemoneh Esrei, but then the Gemara immediately qualified, but that's only for the select few like the Rashbi and his colleagues. So the Gemara says, now there is a braisa that says that one is not allowed to stop neither for Shemoneh Esrei. Sorry, one doesn't have to stop neither for Shemoneh Esrei nor for Shema. So Kitanya hi be'ibur shana. So the Gemara says, no, that is very limited circumstance where because you are so engaged in one activity, so you do not stop, not for Shemoneh Esrei, not even for Shema. And what is that activity in which you're not going to be stopping for these? So that's B'Ibur Shana. That's when a group of people are involved in adding an extra Adar in the year. Intercalation. Nowadays, we don't think much about it because our calendar is fixed. But if you go back to a time in a historical time where the calendars were not fixed, so the additional month of Adar, the Adar base that was added, was going to be done by the Beis Din. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin discusses it in detail. Rashi over here just makes quick reference to the Gemara in Sanhedrin in terms of what they're basing their decision on. When we get to the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Amir Sashem, so we're going to see it in much greater detail. Anyway, but a group of seven judges would be making the decision of adding this extra month. This was such an important decision, and also, I'll add, it was such a timely decision. So therefore, once they were involved in the process, so they did not stop for anything. Not for Shema, not for Shemona Esrei. Amar Rav Abba Abba V'chein Tanu Sabi D'Agrunya. Amar Rav Elazar Bar Tzedek Kishayu Oskim B'Yibar Shana B'Yavne. When they were involved in intercalating the year in Yavne, Lo Avina Mavstikin Lo L'Kriya Shema V'Lo L'Tfila, they didn't stop neither for Shema nor for Tfila as well. Okay, so just this one last section over here, we just went over the end part of the Mishnah says that you can skip Shemona Esrei, but you can't skip Shema. That moved on to a different topic, notably the people that were engaged in the study of Torah. We could just do a quick tosus over here, because I was thinking this, I even thought about this out loud when we did the daf yesterday, and tosus over here addresses it point on. Tosus says, remember yesterday we had the incident with Rabbi Zera and Rabbi Yirmiyah. Rabbi Zera was teaching Torah. And Rabbi Yirmiyah basically got itchy because it came time for davening. And Rabbi Zera actually reprimanded Rabbi Yirmiyah because Rabbi Yirmiyah was basically leaving Torah in order to move on to Tefillah. And our Gemara says that you should. So in other words, it sounds like from our Gemara that Rabbi Yirmiyah was perfectly in the correct, he was in the right, and Rabbi Zera, who reprimanded him, it sounds like Rabbi Zera was not correct. And so Tosfos over here addresses that point. You can see the second Tosfos on the Amud. So v'had amar le Rabbi Zera le Rabbi Yirmiyah meiser az no mishmo Torah. So yes, the Tosfos goes over the Gemara. It's yesterday's daf. V'yishlamar taraso haisa umnaso. So interesting. One answer of Tosfos is that as far as Rabbi Zera, and I guess you're going to have to add Rabbi Yirmiyah to this as well. So they fell under the category of taraso umnaso. That's a really it's a challenging answer of Tosfos. Meaning we just learned in our Gemara that Rav Yochanan is not one of those elite learners where he totally dedicated his time to learning. And so what Tosfos is now suggesting is that Rav Yochanan is not an elite learner and Rav Yirmiyah and Rav Zera are. That's a challenging answer. But anyway, but Tosfos says it. Oh, and I was thinking this, but now, you know, yesterday's daf, I should have known Tosfos today. But anyway, the second answer of Tosfos, so Adayin lo haisa shah overes. Or Tosfos says, or maybe there was more time. Meaning it wasn't, in other words, they weren't going to be missing Zman Tefillah. And Rav Yirmiyah got itchy just simply because he got itchy. But there was more time to daven. All right, that's a second possibility of Tosfos. Anyway, but that second answer, so I did think about. But Tosfos says it, which obviously is a source. I'm not a source. Anyway, we continue. We are now at the Mishnah on the bottom of Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. The Mishnah starts off. And now we are finally here, meaning we're at Erev Shabbos. So now we're in Friday afternoon, and the Mishnah now is going to be addressing concerns and considerations on a Friday afternoon. And these are more than just considerations, by the way. These are Isurei Derabanan. And we start off with the Mishnah, Lo Yetzei Achayit B'machtos HaMachachashecha. As you approach night on Friday afternoon, and samach lechashecha, so let's say it's a half an hour, right? Generally speaking, that's the time frame we look at when we use the word samach in the context of halacha. So a half an hour before Shabbos begins. Okay, Shabbos begins with Shkiyas Hachama. I know that's a simplification, but for our purposes, that's perfect. Shabbos begins at the sunset. So you go back a half an hour before sunset. So we say to the tailor, don't walk around with your needle. Now, where's the needle right now? Is he holding it? Is it in his shirt? So stay tuned. We're going to be discussing that a little bit later in the daf. And what's the concern? Shami Yishkach V'yetzei. Because he's a tailor. And he always walks around with a needle. And if a half an hour before Shabbos, he's still holding on to the needle. So the Chachamim were concerned that he's going to still continue to hold on to the needle even after Shabbos begins. Holding the needle, I mean, the needle is muktzah. You're not going to be making a gzera before Shabbos because of muktzah, but If he were to carry the needle, so that would be a malacha votza'ah. And by the way, if I could just simply suggest, that's why the Gemara spent the last 10 blot going over the introduction of hotza'ah, because preparing us for this Mishnah, in which the gzera was made for the malacha votza'ah. I think that's a simple pshat. I even think it's correct. Anyway, Shema Yishkach V'yetze. And so if he holds his needle a half an hour before Shabbos, he'll continue holding his needle into Shabbos, and he'll violate the malacha votza'ah. So this is a gzera derabanan. And included in this gzera is basically any professional with his tool. V'lo lavla b'komaso, a scribe is not allowed to go out with his quill. V'lo yafles kelav, and one is not allowed to delouse his clothing. We're going to explain that better when we get to the Gemara, so right now I'll leave that alone. V'lo yikrala or aner, and a person is not allowed to read by candlelight on Friday night. The concern over here is that while reading on Friday night by the candlelight, he's going to want more light. He's going to tilt the candle, introducing more oil into the wick, and that's going to be the malacha of being mavir. Be'emes Amru, now, although the Chachamim made a ban on reading by candlelight on Friday night, but they give the following allowances. Hachazan roehechen tinokas karin. If you have the chazan, now chazan over here, Rashi offers a couple of pshatim or what that means. Chazan over here could be the gabbai. Chazan over here could be the malami tinokos, the rebbe. Either way, he could show the students where they are in the chumash. And Rashi over here goes through a detailed account of why he's doing that on a Friday night. But in any event, that would be okay. Now, Rashi explains why is that okay? Because as far as the students are concerned, they're not going to touch the lamp. The Rebbe's right behind them, and they're afraid. And as far as the Rebbe's concerned, being that he's not using the light, but rather it's the students, so the Rebbe won't touch the lamp as well. So a dispensation that is given. The Mishnah introduces with the words Be'emes Amru, right? In truth, they said. So if you've been around long enough and you've seen enough Mishnayos, so you know this expression Be'emes Amru, that's an expression usually dedicated to something which is Halach LaMoshe MiSinai. Over here, it's a little bit challenging because we're talking about Gzera Derabanan. So, and when the Gzera applies and when the Gzera doesn't apply. So it's a little bit strange to plug in the usual translation of Halach LaMoshe MiSinai. So Be'emes Amru, HaChazan Roa Hechen Tinokas Korin, Aval Hu Lo Yikra. But the Chazan himself is not allowed to read, because if he starts reading using the light of the lamp, he's going to then be inclined to incline the lamp. Kayotzi Bo Lo Yochel Azavim Azavim Mimnei Hergol Avera. A Zav and a Zavav, husband and wife, are both experiencing the Zav discharge. He's a Zav and she's a Zava. So they're not allowed to eat together because of Hergol Avera, because it may lead to Avera. And this will be explained in much greater detail later on. So for now, I'll just read the Mishnah, translate the Mishnah, and in terms of understanding, we'll understand it much better when we get to the Gemara. We're in the very bottom of Yud Aleph. I'm an Aleph starting with the Gemara. Tanan Hasam, we're going to learn a Mishnah together. And this is the Mishnah Erevin. And the Mishnah teaches us, Lo Yamod Adam Rishus Yachav Yishtev Rishus Arabim. A person is not allowed to stand in a Rishus Yachid and drink from Rishus Arabim. Meaning, if you could just imagine, now I'm going to try to paint the scene. So he's standing on whatever structure which is a Rishus Yachid. It could be just a fenced in yard. And now, right alongside the fenced in yard, there's a stream, and the stream happens to be flowing through a Rishus Arabim. And so what he wants to do now is lean over and drink from the stream. Okay, there's some sort of opening in the Rishus Yachid. There's a doorway right there. So he could just simply lean over and drink from the stream. Now, he's not actually going to bring the water over from the Rishus Arabim to Rishus Yachid. That obviously is the Malacha Votza'ah. All he's going to do is just simply keep the majority of his body in the Rishus Yachid and just move his head into the Rishus Arabim in order to drink from that water. So the Mishnah tells us that one's not allowed to do that. And Rishus Arabim v'yishtev Rishus Yachid, and the converse also is true, cannot be standing in the Rishus Arabim and leaning into a Rishus Yachid to drink a water that's available. Avalim hichnas rosh v'rubo l'makum shu shosem mutar. However, an allowance is given if the majority of his body is in that domain. If it's just his head that's in that domain, so that's going to be prohibited. But if his entire body is in that domain, so then it would be permitted. V'chein begas. And then, The Mishnah concludes by saying, and the same thing is true regarding agas. Now, that last two words of the Mishnah, we're going to explain that better in just a moment. But basically, before we continue in the Gemara, what's the overarching issue over here? The overarching issue over here is basically Gzeira d'Rabbanan, meaning if you put your head in another domain and drink the water while keeping your head in that other domain, in of itself, you didn't violate any malacha. Meaning that is not the malacha of Hotzah, because your head is in the same place in which you're drinking, where the water source is. And that's not going to be a malacha. Now, it's interesting, by the way, because the water obviously is going to pass through your body. It's going to go through your esophagus and it's going to go into your stomach. And your stomach currently is in the other rishos. But, and Tosfos makes this point, and you have to say this, that's halachically, that's not transferring. Meaning when you bring the water into your mouth, that now becomes the makom hanacha. So technically speaking now, here is what the Gemara is teaching us. That if your head is in a domain and it's just your head, that's not halachically a transfer. That's not a hotzah. However, because the Chachamim were concerned, that here's what's going to happen, is that if you start engaging in this kind of activity, so you're going to end up then transferring the water itself into the other domain. If you just are moving your head and only your head into the other domain to drink, so that behavior is going to lead to the behavior of then just simply moving the water itself into the other domain and then drinking it, and then obviously then you're violating the Malach of Otsah. So the Chachamim therefore banned this activity of moving your head in. Once you move your head in the majority of your body, so at that point in time, it's clear enough that you, because the majority of your body now is in the other domain, so basically the Chachamim felt that there was no reason to make a gzera under those circumstances. Okay. Ibai Lahu. The Gemara says, okay, so the Mishnah and Erevin we just went through, we have good pshat in the Mishnah. The Gemara now wants to know the following question, Karmelis Mai. Let's say that the case over here is adjusted with one variable. And that is that instead of you staying in the Rishos HaYachid and the water being in the Rishos HaRabim, let's say that you're in the Rishos HaYachid and the water's in a Karmelis. Now, as we learned back on Daf Vav, one is not allowed to transfer from a Karmelis to Rishos HaYachid. That is an Isser D'Rabbanan. So, did the Chachamim make a Gzera under these circumstances? Where one would be prohibited to put his head into the other domain to drink the water for fear that he may end up transferring from the Karmelis to the Rishos HaYachid. So the Gemara wants to know, is this Gzera going to be true even if the other domain is not a Rishos HaRabim, but even if the other domain is a Karmelis? So what would be the halacha then? So Amar Abayihi, so Abayihi says, it's the same Gzera, nothing changed. Rava, Amar Rava says, what are you talking about? He, Gufa Gzera, so Rava says, this doesn't make any sense to me. The idea that your head is in the other domain and you're drinking, so that already is an Isser D'Rabbanan, as we explained. Mida Araisa, you didn't transfer. That's not a Hotzah. But the Chachamim were concerned that if it's only your head that went into the other domain, you then may get into the habit of bringing the water back with you. And that would be an Isser D'Araisa. But the idea that putting your head in the other domain and drinking, that in of itself is only an Isser D'Rabbanan. And now you want to tell me that we're going to extend that Isser D'Rabbanan to another Isser D'Rabbanan of Karmelis? That's what's called Gzera L'Gzera. And as a rule throughout Shas, one does not make a Gzera L'Gzera. Now it's interesting, by the way, because Abaye agrees with that basic principle of Ein Osin Gzera L'Gzera. So there's a really interesting Tosfos over here. It's the first Divrei HaMashal on this Amud Amar Abaye. So Tosfos says that it's true that Abaye generally agrees of Ein Osin Gzera L'Gzera, but what Abaye would argue is that specifically in the Malach of Hotza'ah, so one can make multiple Gzeras in the Malach of Hotza'ah. And just if you could think about this idea for just a moment of Tosfos, like why by the Malach of Hotza'ah would there be compound Gzeras? And I could suggest, but it's just a suggestion on my part, that because Hotza'ah is quote-unquote an inferior malach, it's a malach gerua, so therefore the Chachamim needed to, so to say, bolster the malacha. They needed to reinforce it. And so therefore, even though normally we don't make one gzera compounded on top of another, but because of the nature of the malach of Hotza'ah, So therefore, it requires compound gzeiros. I would suggest that as a pshat and tosfos. But anyway, and now for the remainder of today's daf, what the Gemara was going to want to know is whether this position of Abai is a supportable position. That when it comes to the malach of Otsa'ah, is there going to be a double gzeira? Again, gzeira number one is that one is not allowed to put his head into another domain and drink the water for fear that he's going to bring the water back with him. In other words, not after it's in his mouth, but even before it's in his mouth. That's gzeira number one. And then gzeira number two is that would we say the same thing if that other domain is not a Rishos HaRambam, but that other domain was a Carmelis? Would we then compound the gzeira on top of another gzeira? Amar Abaye Mina Aminala. So here is now for the rest of today's daf, and going into tomorrow's daf, the Gemara starts this discussion. So how do I know that I'm right, says Rava? I'm sorry, says Abaye, based on the Mishnah Erevin that we just learned. And specifically by the last two words. Diktani, it says in the Brice of Achim Begas. It says that the same thing is true regarding a press. Now, what did the Mishnah mean by that? My gas, Irishos Yachin. Now, is the gas in question over here? Now, the gas is a large structure. It's an olive press. Olive press or wine press. But it's really a large structure. Now, does it have the dimensions of Rishos Yachin? So, Tanina. Yeah, okay, fine. But then, the Mishnah is telling something that we already knew. Meaning, the Mishnah already taught us that you can't be standing in the Rishos HaRabim and inserting your head into the Rishos Yachin to drink water. So over here, if the gas is a Rishos Yachid, so it's fundamentally the same point. And E Rishos HaRabim, and if the gas is a Rishos HaRabim. Now, I'm not really sure how it could be a Rishos HaRabim. Rashi over here says that it's below three tefachim, meaning the gas is so low to the ground, it basically becomes batel, it becomes now part and parcel of the Rishos HaRabim. Okay. Anyway, so Tanina, but we already learned that as well. So, Elalav Karmelis. So the Gemara says, so you know what the Mishnah in Erevin is teaching us with the words Vechei Megas? The Gas over here in question is a Karmelis. Meaning, what are the dimensions of a Karmelis? Anything that has an area, a surface area of 4x4 Tfachim, and is within the range of 3 to 10. Anything lower than 3 is considered part of the ground. Anything above 10 is a Rishos HaYachid. So anything within the range of 3 to 10. And so maybe the Gas in question over here is a Karmelis. Now, it's true, we did say earlier that a Karmelis cannot be a Keli, and Tosfos over here is sensitive to that. You can see that the short Tosfos, Elalav Karmelis, where Tosfos is sensitive to the idea that we normally say that a Kli cannot be Karmelis. But in any event, you see the Tosfos where he has a very short discussion on that point. But anyway, so this is what the Gemara is suggesting. If this is correct pshat in the Mishnah, so now we have an excellent support for Abaye. Because now the Mishnah is teaching us is that one is not allowed to put his head in another domain to drink the water, and not only when it comes from Rishos Yachid to Rishos HaRabim or the reverse, but also if the other domain, even as a Karmelis, it still would be prohibited, assuming the Gas mentioned in the Mishnah is a Karmelis. To which the Gemara says, Rav Amar Vechei Megas Linyan Meiser. So Rav says, no, you misunderstood the Mishnah in Erevin altogether. The Mishnah in Erevin is talking about a totally different halacha, and that is Meiser. V'chein and Rav Sheshes v'chein begaslin yin Meiser. And Rav Sheshes says the same pshat as well. Now, so these Amoraim saying that the pshat in the Mishnah has to do with Meiser and has nothing to do with Shabbos. What does it have to do with Meiser? So let's learn a Mishnah together in order to understand. Did not. So first thing we're going to learn is a Mishnah together. The Mishnah is from Meisros. Fourth parak of Meisros. Shosin alagas ben alachamim ben alatzonein. So, upater. One is allowed to drink from the wine press, and it doesn't matter whether he diluted it with warm water or with cold water. Now, let's understand. The Mishnah over here is describing wine that has only made it to the wine press. And we know, the halacha is that in order for any produce to be chayv in trumas ha-maisros min ha-Torah, so it has to go through the stage of gemar malacha. Gemar malacha, as it relates to wine, is only when the wine is put into the pit. Put into the pit in order to start the fermentation process. But in the press itself, it is pre-gemar malacha. And so that means that min ha-Torah, it's not chayiv yet in trumas ha-maisros. Now, any produce that's not chayiv in trumas ha-maisros, so you're allowed to eat it. However, what you're not allowed to do is you're not allowed to eat achilas keva. You're only allowed to eat achilas arai. And so what we're going to be seeing together in this Mishnah in Trumos is what is considered achilas arai. I know in this case we're not talking about eating, we're talking about drinking, but it's the same idea. Shtias arai. What's considered achilas arai versus achilas keva. So according to the first opinion of the Mishnah in Trumas, which I didn't read the last three words, Divrei Rabbi Meir, according to Rabbi Meir in this Mishnah in Trumas, achilas arai relates to drinking, is basically any drinking from the wine press. And remember, back in the day, they would dilute their wines, and sometimes with cold water, sometimes with warm water, it doesn't matter. If you were to dilute the wine and drink it from the wine press, so because it's pre-Gemar Malacha, and Reb Meir views all this as a rye drinking, so therefore it's fine. Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Tzedek Mechayev, and Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Tzedek says that you're chayev, meaning you have to be mafish shumas amaisros, and you can't drink from the wine press. And he doesn't feel that any drinking from the wine press would be considered an arai type of drinking. And the chachamim split the halacha between whether you dilute it in warm water or whether you dilute it in cold water. Why? Why is it different? So when you dilute it in warm water, so because you now dilute in warm water, you're going to be drinking the entire cup. You're not going to, whatever you leave over, you're not going to be putting back into the wine press. The reason why is because the warm water is going to be have an adverse effect on all the other wine that's in the press. If, however, you dilute it with cold water, so whatever you leave over, you're going to put back in the wine press. So, according to the Chachamim, if diluted with warm water, because you're going to end up drinking all that, that's not considered a shtiyas sarai. If you dilute it with cold water, so then you would put it back into the press because that would be viewed, and that would be viewed as a shtiyas sarai. And so basically now, here's what we're saying. That's a lot of trees, and now let's go back and see the forest. So now what we're saying is that in that Mishnah Erevin, when the Mishnah says v'chein begas, it's not talking anymore about the malach avotzah. It's not talking about transferring from a rishus yachid to a karmelis, or from Rosh Hashanah to a Carmelis. And it's not, and the Mishnah is not a support for Abaye. But rather what the Mishnah is telling us is that one would be allowed to drink from the wine press that is untithed, where Trumas and Maisos were not taken off, but only if it is considered an Arai type drinking. And what's part of the definition of Arai drinking? Arai drinking is where basically you're hovering over the wine press. Okay. Tanan. And now we're going to continue. And the Gemara is continuing now. We're going to try to see if we could support Abai's idea that by the Malach of Otsa'ah, the Chachamim were prepared to make a double gzera. Tanan, the Gemara quotes the following Mishnah. And so now we go back to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that a tailor cannot go out with a needle a half an hour before Shabbos. Now, my lab de tchuvala bibigdo. Where is the needle right now? Is he holding in his hands? The Gemara assumes no. The needle right now is in the clothing of the tailor. The tailor has the needle tucked away in his clothing and prepared to make usage of it. And the Gemara is assuming right now that if that's true, if that assumption is correct, so what kind of carrying is this? This is not normal carrying. This is carrying which is done with a shinui, meaning we're talking about an Isser de Rabbanan. And yet the Chachamim laid a gzera down that the tailor is not allowed to go out with the needle a half an hour before Shabbos because he may end up forgetting about it and walking out with it on Shabbos. Even though ultimately when he goes out with it on Shabbos, not holding it in his hand but rather in his clothing, that only is an Isser de Rabbanan. And so what did we just learn together? That there's a compound gzera. The first gzera of not walking out with it around a half an hour before Shabbos, for fear that it would lead to him walking around with it on Shabbos, even though the Hotzah is not an Isser Torah, but rather an Isser Derabbanan. That is the Gemara's assumption, and then this would be a support for Abaye. To which the Gemara says, nope, that's not correct, Pshat. Denakale biyade. Nope. He actually is holding the needle in his hand. That's how we can understand the Mishnah, and we're talking now about an Isser Daraisa. Continuing in the Gemara, Tashma lo yesa chai b'machtoa tchuvlo b'bigdom. We have another brisa, and this brisa is actually very clear. It describes where the needle is in his beged. So again, it's an Isser Derabbanan if in fact he were to walk out with it. So my lo be'er Shabbos lo kitanya hi b'Shabbos. Now the Gemara says Now, isn't this Bryce describing Erev Shabbos? The Gemara says, no, it deflects. No, the Bryce is talking about on Shabbos itself. So it's not a double gzera. So the Gemara says, Vatanya. The Gemara says, okay, but I'm going to quote you another Bryce. Lo yetza achai b'machto ha'tchuva b'bigdo, b'erev Shabbos im chashecha. This Bryce says it. The tailor cannot go out with a needle in his garment before Shabbos. So that now is a double gzera. Because it's before Shabbos, it's gzera number one. And in his garment, meaning even if he were to forget about it, he's carrying it in an unusual manner, and that would be an issur derabanan. So here we see a compound gzera as it relates to otzal. So the Gemara deflects this as well. Hamani Rabbi Yehuda hidamar uman derchum naso chayev. So the Gemara says, yeah, but you're working with a false assumption. You think that if he forgot about it, and he walked with the needle in his clothing, and not holding it in his hand, you think that's only an issur derabanan? Not according to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that because for the professional, this is the manner in which he walks out. And Rashi writes over here, why does the professional walk out with a needle in his clothing? So interesting, Rashi writes, I'm not going to read the Rashi, but you could see it inside. Rashi dibra amaschal bekisim shebaazno. Rashi says it's advertising, meaning when somebody sees a person walking out with needles in his clothing, so now he basically it's basically he's wearing a sign saying, I'm a tailor, and anyone want to hire me? I'm available. Ditanya, the Gemara quotes the following brisa: Lo yetzei achai b'machto tchuvelo b'bigdo velo nagar b'kisem shabazno. And the brisa over here is going to be describing all these types of professionals who have their tools in their either in their clothing or basically somewhere attached around their neck or around their ear. And again, the point the Bryce is going to make is, for these people, this is a normal way of carrying. And I'm not going to go through the details of all these professionals and all their tools. Rashi does spend time with it, but I'm not going to. But anyway, lo yetzei achai b'machto tchuvelo b'bigdo. The tailor should not go out with a needle in his clothing. V'lo nagar b'kisim sheba'azno. The carpenter with some sort of measuring tool. And somehow he had it strapped to his ear. V'lo sarg b'meshicha sheba'azno. The comer. So he had some sort of tool that he also wore in his ear. Velo gardi b'irash b'azno. And the weaver. And he had some sort of tool in his ear. Velo tzava b'dugmash b'tzavaro. And the dyer, where he would have a swatch wrapped around his neck. Velo shulchani b'dinosh b'azno. And the money changer. And he would somehow have some sort of coin attached to his ear. Again, not sure exactly what that means, but whatever. Im yatsa patar v'asa divrei mer. Now, Rameir says that if he were to walk outside in Shabbos carrying these items in this unusual manner, so that would be an Isser Derabanan. And Rabbi Yehuda Omer, and here's the part that we are looking for, and that Shitas Rabbi Yehuda, and that is, Uman Derechum Naso Chayav, that because he's a professional, because this for him is a normal and usual manner, so therefore this person would be Chayav. Vishar Kol Adam Pater, and for everybody else who carries in this manner, it is unusual, and therefore it's going to be Pater. So, what we see over here is this idea that, according to Rabbi Yehuda, when the professional goes out with an item in his clothing, because this is the usual manner for him, so therefore it would be an issur d'oraisa. And so therefore, to wrap it up, we no longer have a proof for Abaye, because we thought that when the tailor goes out with a needle in his clothing, that would be an issur d'rabanan. That's one gzera d'rabanan. By virtue of the fact that the Chachamim banned him from doing so a half an hour before Shabbos. That's a second Gzera Derabanan. And you see that there are compound Gzera Derabanan. And the Gemara's deflection over here is no, because it's built on a incorrect assumption. When the tailor goes out with a needle in his clothing, that's an Issur Derabanan, according to Rabbi Yehuda. It's an Issur Daraisa. And so therefore, it is not a compound Gzera. It's a Gzera on an Issur Daraisa. It's one Gzera. And let's just quickly recap our daf today. Our daf, we started off on the Amud Aleph going over all the members of Rava Bar Mechasya in the name of Rav Chama Bar Gurya in the name of Rav. Including yesterday's daf, there were 9 in total. Today we went through numbers 4 through 9 in terms of all the various limudim. And I'm just going to rattle them off point by point of what we saw today. 1, go to a city that's been inhabited not for a long time, so therefore its sins have not been accumulated. 2, not to build a house higher than the shul. 3 is that you should work for the pecking order of who your boss should be and who your boss should not be. 4, a person should try to avoid certain illnesses, ailments, and discomforts, and a isha ra'a. Five, we can't possibly understand how complicated it is to run a government. And six is if you have a bad dream, so one should engage in a tanis chalom, specifically the morning and the day after you had that bad dream. We then went on to discuss this morning the end of the Mishnah on Daf Tesamad Beis, where it says that you stop for Shema, but you don't stop for Shemona Esrei, which seems to be just a repetition. And the Gemara explains, no, new topic. The topic at the end of the Mishnah is talking about people who are totally dedicated to the learning of Torah. For these people, we're Torasso, Umnasso, so they can't skip Kriya Shema, but they can skip Tefillah. But then the Gemara points out that this is really for an elite core of Talmidei Chachamim, those like the Rashbi. But Rav Yochanan says, but for the rest of us, including himself, he says that we don't have a right to skip Shemona Esrei. We started the next Mishnah on the bottom of the Amud. The Mishnah talks about Gzeiros D'Rabbanan, that one is prohibited from doing as Shabbos is approaching. Notably, the Mishnah goes through a number of Gzeiros, but notably the first one is that the tailor cannot go out with a needle prior to Shabbos, a half an hour before Shabbos, for fear that he's going to forget about it, and he's going to walk outside on Shabbos with the needle. And then the rest of today's daf was a discussion / debate between Abai and Rava, is this Gezerah also going to include the Carmelists as well? If let's say, I'm sorry, let me summarize it this way. If the Isser of carrying the needle was an Isser de Rabbanan, would the Chachamim make the same Gezerah? Do we make compound Gezerahs when it comes to the Malach of Hotza'ah? And that was a debate between Abai and Rava. Abai says we do, and Rava says we do not. And the subsequent discussion of the Gemara are basically all revolving around whether the position of Abai is a supportable position. And two-fourth, the Gemara has not supported Abai's position.